It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison is celebrating their 40th anniversary. As part of that celebration, Ezra Klein will be coming to Madison to talk about our nation's seemingly vast political divide and what needs to be done to overcome it. Ezra Klein writes for the New York Times opinion section. He hosts the Ezra Klein Show podcast and is author of Why We're So Polarized. Ezra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're visiting Wisconsin in a few weeks here for a talk about the rise in polarization. What would you say is behind this polarizing of us?
Oh, my goodness. Wrote a whole book on it. So, you know, there are different things at different times. My book came out in 2020. And when I wrote it, I was tracking a way that the parties had changed over the course of much of the 20th century. And there's a kind of quick and big historical story you can tell about that. You know, we really had a four-party system early in the 20th century where you had very conservative Southern Dixiecrats and more liberal Democrats. You had more liberal Republicans, more conservative Republicans. And it's really the Civil Rights Act and the sort of racial polarization and realignment that created the two-party system we know now. And so I got a whole story you could tell about polarization built around that. I would say something has changed, though, in the past 4 years, where the locus of polarization, I think, has become much more around the system itself. When you think about polarization, you always want to ask the question, what are we actually divided over? And increasingly, we're divided over this question of, you know, these questions that right-wing populism bring into the story, which is, you know, are institutions fundamentally corrupt? Is the political system fundamentally corrupt? Are elections fundamentally stolen? You now have these much more strange bedfellow coalitions where Mitt Romney seems in many ways more like a Democrat, even though he was a Republican nominee as recently as 2012. But the Republicans and this sort of whole anti-MAGA coalition have become much further from and the whole MAGA coalition become much further from each other. So polarization, big topic and something to keep an eye on is that it's always changing. The locus of division is always changing.
Yeah, and I appreciate that update, Ezra, as a look at whether or not the systems even work, the institutions still operate on behalf of the people. But how do you begin to bridge, what does a bridge across that political divide even look like when folks are doubting the systems, institutions themselves?
It is not obvious to me right now that there is a bridge across the political divide. People don't like to hear that.
Huh.
But, you know, I've been in politics for a long time now, 20 years. And for most of my time in politics, you had a lot of these efforts aimed at creating, you know, bipartisan civil dialogue. And one of the things that I was talking about with a friend the other day is that those have kind of all collapsed, these things like no labels and other things like that. Because, you know, when we were discussing and debating and disagreeing over policy, right, if you think about the period where the big division in the country had to do with whether we would pass Obamacare or the Paul Ryan budget, even if that was a highly polarized time, you could imagine ways to get around it because policy is fundamentally positive sum. I can come up with a healthcare system or a tax system or a Social Security system that would, from both conservative and liberal perspectives, make a lot of people better off. Now, we might not end up there because there are elections and one side and the sides don't want to agree in many cases because the minority party does not want to give the majority party a win. But when you are actually asking about policies, a lot you can do. When you're asking about power, there's a lot less you can do. And particularly when you get into these questions when we, you know, have deep divisions over, you know, whether or not the 2020 election was even fair, right? And obviously, I think it was. But the nature of the division, it just came out yesterday, the Republican National Committee has been asking job applicants if they believe the 2020 election was stolen or not. If the nature of the polarization becomes that fundamental, then what you really have is competition. You're not going to bridge a divide. One side is going to lose. One side is going to win. They might trade power back and forth. But it's much more dangerous and unstable system because you can't really compromise over the question of was the 2020 election stolen. That isn't a zone for constructive bargaining.
Ezra Klein, our guest, New York Times columnist, author, podcast host, and will be visiting Wisconsin coming up early next month. And I'm curious from your perspective, Ezra, the role you see identity playing in our politics.
I think in some ways, politics is always about identity. And we don't always like to admit that. But one of the points I make in the book is that in many ways, the rise of what we call identity politics actually reflects identity becoming weaker in this country, not stronger, or at least identity becoming more pluralistic. So politics doesn't seem like it is about identity when one identity is really able to dominate. So for a very long time, there was a very normative American identity, white, male, Christian, and power was held by members of that identity class. And they were able to hold the system together such that everything else looked non-normative. Everything else looked marginal. Everything else looked like something surprising, right? I mean, it's fairly recent that we have significant female representation actually in the elected political system, right? I mean, it's only in the early 20th century that you even get the women having the right to vote. It's only in the 60s that you really get the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act. So what you have now, because of how America's changed demographically, is a system where you don't have one identity with a hammerlock on power. You have more identities, people from more perspectives contesting political power and, you know, arguing that they deserve a piece in it. And that makes for a much more conflictual system with many more identities, you know, competing with each other. But at the same time, you actually have a system where many more kinds of voices can be heard. So this is, I think, a bit of a paradox of the time, that at the same time that identity becomes most visible, it becomes weakest. There is no one dominant class now in the way there has been at other times, in fact, at most times in American history. But that the very end of that has created a kind of political instability that people feel as, that people experience as division.
Ezra Klein, what about the way we divide ourselves? I think about our congressional districts here, our legislative maps in Wisconsin, which has recently been redrawn with a bipartisan agreement as a result of a state Supreme Court pending decision. And we've got the WPR has this great podcast about the gerrymandering of Wisconsin over a decade ago now called Mapped Out, worth checking out. But the way we organize ourselves, does that play a role in the way we are polarized today as you see it?
It very much does. I mean, you know, there's a polarization of the public, right, what the public believes, and there's a polarization of the political system. And oftentimes the political system is a lot more polarized than actual people. You know, one of the ways I have to talk about this is that at the end of the day, politics has as a way of collapsing what are very complicated political opinions down into binary political opinions, right? You might have all these views about the world. At the end of the day, you have to vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump. You have to vote for, you know, this Senate candidate or that Senate candidate. That gets even worse when this House candidate or that House candidate can, instead of facing a sort of normal sample of voters, right, a sample of voters chosen and constructed in some fair way, when they're actually choosing their own voters, right? When they can do that, then that gives elites, right, that gives, you know, people in political power the ability to be much more out of step with the messiness of public opinion, but never face consequences for it. You know, if instead of having to win 50% of your district plus one, you can actually just rewrite the district map so you're almost guaranteed 50% plus one, then you don't really need to worry about what the people you're representing actually think of what you're doing. You can simply change the people you're representing. It's a simple axiomatic way of thinking about politics. Voters are supposed to choose their politicians. Politicians are not supposed to choose their voters.
Well, that just makes sense. So if we were to look at ways we could begin a process of finding some common ground here, Ezra Klein, is it based on how we view our realities? As we started the conversation, it was like, listen, this isn't about issues. This is our belief about the world we're living in today. So how do we see a path to come to some terms there?
I am not a political consultant, and as I said, I'm not particularly optimistic. We're going to see a near-term way out of this division. You know, the thing that I do believe is that you win elections by, at least in part, governing well, right? I mean, I think Wisconsin is a good example of this. And so to the extent I have, you know, advice for anybody in politics, for the Biden administration, for anybody else, is that, you know, like if you have a strong record to run on, right, that's something. But as I was saying earlier, I don't think the path out of division right now is going to come through some kind of grand compromise. I think it's going to come because, you know, look, I am, to be blunt about it, not on the side of the sort of Make America Great faction in American politics. And The reason is that I think it's like deeply out of step with a lot of our values, but also out of step with good governance. But that means that the people who do govern well have to do a really good job governing and then have to win elections. And then ultimately, if Republicans want to keep winning elections, which they've not had a great record on recently, they'll shift strategies and move more to the middle. Sometimes you don't win by compromise. Sometimes you win by winning. And then the other side figures out how to compromise. The Democrats had to do this in the sort of late 80s into the early 90s when Bill Clinton moderated the party. If Republicans, I think, keep losing, at some point they will probably do this again, too. But that requires Democrats to be exceptionally both strategic in their political positioning, but also effective in their governance, which is not, I think, something they always take as seriously as they need to, which is, in fact, the topic of my next book.
Looking forward to it. And welcome. Looking forward to welcoming you to Wisconsin, Ezra Klein. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Ezra Klein writes for the New York Times opinion section, hosts the Ezra Klein Show podcast, and is author of Why We're So Polarized. On April 16th, Klein will be in Madison for a public talk about polarization with UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs. While the event is currently sold out, more tickets may become available and released at a later date. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.